a real deal. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
Here we are again for another podcast. I am joined this week for an interview with Charles Ray. Charles, how's it going?
Going great, Nate. How are you?
I'm doing well. So we are bringing you on, Charlie, because you have the unfortunate, I guess I'm not sure the best way to put this. You have the unfortunate right and ability to talk about a very, very terrible disease that you have been diagnosed with and that you are living with. And we wanted to get you to the Moscone Cup this year so that you could see it because you've never had the opportunity. And I've talked a million times about the Moscone Cup on this podcast. Everybody knows I'm a huge fan of it, and everybody has to experience that at some point in time. So we had to make sure that you got there this year. Well, so first off, why don't you take a couple seconds and talk about ALS and what it actually is and how it affects you, and then we'll move on from there.
All right. Well, for most people, I try to go into it with the lead of either know my disease by three different names. If you're old like me in the 50s or older, you know it as Lou Gehrig's disease. As we got later, say 40, 50 years later, there's a gentleman who was a baseball player who ended up having this dreaded disease of Lou Gehrig. And his family and him decided to do a Facebook post, which they called and named it the Ice Bucket for Day, which went nationwide and worldwide and was a big viral effect. And now the younger generation, say the 20s and 30s, know it as the Ice Bucket for Day. And then as I was diagnosed with it, just almost 2 years now ago, I actually had it for 5 years prior. It's called ALS, which is the ugly brother of MS and MDA and any other neurological illness you now have, such as Parkinson's and senility. They all are kind of interrelated. And so that's where I'm coming from. I've been playing pool for 50 years, and the illness attacks your nerves. You basically rot in your own body to death. It robs you of your strength. It robs you of your dignity. It robs you of a lot of things where you cannot function. You end up dying because your body ends up sitting down on you. Because everything that works in your body has to do with nerves and neurological control, and you lose all that. So thanks to a bunch of great friends. They knew that I played pool for over 50 years, and I always wanted to see the Moscone Cup and could never afford to. Kind of a private person, I don't like to ask for help. And some really good friends, such as Emmanuel Harris and a few others from Colorado, as well as nationwide, decided to take it upon them to give somebody who has no voice and has no position in life to demand or get a gift like I did. But because some really amazing people gave me the opportunity to go see the Moscone Cup, and it was great for many reasons. One was the fact that I got to see some of the greatest bull ever, and that's where I'm at. I'm 7 years in. 80% of ALS patients, they get from diagnosis, die within the first 2 to 5 months. After that, in the first 2 to 5 years, another 30% die. And the 1%ers that are lucky enough to live past 5 years are people like me, which I'm one of those 1%. I'm at 7 years still fighting the fight and trying to put out the word about ALS, so people know and can understand it and help finance drugs and treatments. There's only been two drugs in over 50 years of this illness, and they just came out after the Ice Bucket Brigade success. Now they're starting to develop more and more medicines and understanding a little bit more about the illness. They don't even know how it happens, but they do know now that it's hereditary and a few things like that. But it's still a very unknown illness. It just happens to like 22,000 people a year.
So you're 7 years in at this point. Where are you at as far as the process of this? Are you still pretty mobile? Are you able to get around? Where are you at in the process of this?
Well, if I wasn't so stubborn and had a lot of sports background, I'd probably be a lot less mobile. My breathing is very, very tough now. I have to use a machine to breathe most of the time. I cannot walk on my own. I have to either use a stroller or a powered chair. Getting dressed is getting harder and harder. Getting to bed is difficult. Just your normal stuff, everything you take for granted, it's a struggle for me. So I'm getting on the last stages of ALS. Now, that could be 10 years. On the last stage, it could be 10 days, it could be 10 minutes. It's a disease that we all fondly say you wake up to find out what's not working the next day. So you never know how it's going to progress or how it's going to retard itself.
Okay, so we'll pivot away from that. It's obviously it's a very sad story, and it's great that you're able to keep your positive outlook, both not only on life but on the direction for which Pool can go. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. Your incredibly optimistic view of the pool scene and where it's going right now. But we'll attack this question next. What did actually going to the Moscone Cup mean, and what were some of the connections that you were able to make while you were there, and what was your just general outlook of being able to go to an event like that?
Well, what did it mean to me? It meant the world to me. As I said prior to this, with my illness, I try to put goals of 90 days out. And when I first was approached with the possibility of going to the Moscone Cup, that was a goal 90 days before it would happen. And it meant the world to me that to have to stay focused, to go see an event that, to be honest, I've been to a lot of major events throughout the world, Super Bowls, stuff like that, NBA finals, all-star games, and nothing compared to the Moscone Cup as far as interaction with the pros, the intensity, the ability to see a sport that I've had passion for over 50 years be shown in a way that is just amazing. If everybody saw the Moscone Cup, if they go and see the Moscone Cup, especially in the United States, pool would be a major sport in this country. And it has so much benefit to us in so many ways. And it's a shame that people are not able to go and see that, and it's not even being able to be watched on TV that well here in the United States. It's kind of a shame. I met pros such as Skylar Woodward. I met the announcer that was doing the announcing to the players as they came in to compete. I met the lady that put on the tournament, and then met people like UNA and other people there, the who's who of world of figures as far as how things are going and how the direction of pool is going. And it's just a nice breath of fresh air to see that there's still the passion to make pool great in the United States.
Yeah, so let's transition from there to what is your view of the game going forward? I think you have, in probably the most morbid way possible, you have kind of a unique outlook on the game right now, to where you have the ability to look ahead to pool when you won't be around for it. So what do you see the game happening in the coming years and say decades?
Well, and thank you for that. that lead in, Nate. I just got done talking to Tyler Woodward today, and where I see pool now is it hasn't shown its benefits yet, but it's getting there every day. And that is when I do pass, I think you will see pool not only come out from underneath the label of, oh, you just go to a pool hall, it's not a sport, that's just something people do, to actually understanding how much talent, not only physical but mental talent and the effort it takes to become great as a professional player, whether it's man or woman. And I think you'll start to see that pool will be probably the most dominant learning and teaching and sport there is in the world. I mean, you already see it in school where books are now showing pool tables to teach geometry to young kids, the physics of a cue ball and all that mathematical equations that when we were little, we said, why do we have to learn math? Well, pool is a great way to teach math. And it's also fun because, like you said, how do I see it going on? People like with me with a life-threatening illness, we can still play and compete. Is it hard? Yeah, but life's hard. Pool is just an extension of life. Whatever happens on a pool table, it happens in life. So I try to show people that, you know, pool is going to be a changer. Not everybody can relate to a football player, a baseball player, or a basketball player, or a soccer player, but everybody can relate. Hey, I get a few pool balls. Oh, that looks pretty easy. And then you start seeing people that have some amazing talent, and you're going, wow, I don't know how they did that. How can I do that? And now you're seeing like Sky Woodward and Billy Thorpe and even Josh Filler and Shaw and some of the other younger players, I cannot pronounce their names, that are representing to people a real person, somebody that has a personality, somebody you can either show as a villain or a hero. And they're interacting, they're showing everybody, see, it can be fun, it can be good. You can play at a high level. It's entertaining. It's not boring. It's not like watching Wimbledon. You don't have to golf clap every 2 seconds. You can get rowdy and cheer for your team. You just got to be respectful when they're shooting, not to say anything. But, I mean, pool is going to – I see pool growing great. And I'm hoping through places like this, avenues like this, and people like you and even like me that – we can get the word out that it's okay to play pool. It's okay to be a nerd and have to think through a complex problem like a pool table does in each and every one of the games that you could play. It's your mind over matter. You have to figure out. And that's where people don't get that that's the athletic part. A lot is the mind you have to play pool at a high level. It's not just hitting ball. It's not just winning matches, is how you get to that certain ball, how do you factor in these certain percentages, and what should be the best way to get to this ball, and how do I compete against this person in the different styles and the different games and disciplines. They all are just fascinating. It's like learning to think. You don't do enough, and there's not enough sports out there to make you think on your feet at a fast rate all the time. And that's the uniqueness.
For sure. So I guess we can transition from this now. And so one of the reasons, well, the biggest reason I wanted to bring you on to highlight not only your story, but what a basically just a small Kickstarter that was started up, basically made, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you said it meant the world to go to the Moscone Cup. I wanted to highlight some of the great work, and I'm going to be bringing on two people that did the most work to help get you there. Definitely the most work to help get you there. But I wanted to highlight just kind of what happens when a small initiative is started towards something that can make just a lasting impact on somebody and, you know, their entire life of a dedication to the game of pool like pool has done for you. I
see you. For example, it's like what you see now with Make-A-Wish. What happened with a small act of kindness was a conversation with a friend. He said, what are you doing at this time of year? And I said, well, I'd like to go to the Stony Cup. Well, why don't you come? We'll have fun. So I can't afford it. And because that person had passion for another human being outside themselves, they put out a GoFundMe. And then friends of mine who knew me and knew how much it meant to me to be able to see a bit, that probably I'll only see once in my life. I doubt they'll be alive for the next Moscone Cup. I hope I am, but I'm not guaranteed that for sure. The odds are not that high for me to get there. But so they did GoFundMe. I had one friend, Manuel Barris, he put together a package for me to fly to Vegas with a person to help assist me, and then a room for me for the week. And that was just the kindness. I was like, you don't have to do that. But because we're other pool players and we all have treated each other as family, he decided that he recognized it as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. He had the opportunity and ability to do that, and because of his kindness, I was able to go there. Another friend helped by getting a hold of people here in Colorado and putting the word out that there is a GoFundMe, that they're trying to get X amount of money so that I had enough money to eat and be able to go around and see the venue and talk to people. And I mean, it's priceless. It's a gift that keeps giving, because I like to try to pay it forward. So whenever I see somebody that I think is struggling, which we all have our struggles, I try to pay forward and help them wherever I can as well. And that's just cool. That's the cool community. And it's an amazing community. And it really doesn't get enough credit for what they do. They're a bunch of big givers.
For sure. And we definitely want to try to create more of this in the game. As pretty much all the listeners know, the pool world kind of has this reputation, or at least it had in the past, of being this kind of a smoke-filled room, bar, game, kind of darker characters with a lot of hustling and shady stuff going on in the backgrounds or even on the forefronts of, you know, the game itself. And I think if we're ever going to get away from kind of that bad reputation the pool has, we need to highlight some of the good that can actually happen from the game. And that's definitely something we want to highlight here, and any other time that we have the opportunity to do that. That's so a lot of the guests that I bring on the podcast, I try to highlight a lot of the people who have done a lot of good things in the world. I hope that comes across to the listeners that I'm trying to highlight the good things that happen in this game. So with that being said, obviously would you like to give a shout out and a thanks to the people who did a lot of the work behind the scenes to help get you there?
Oh, absolutely. I don't know everybody's names. Like I said, I knew Manuel. Stu, I believe, instrumental in getting there. I don't know all the other ones. I was kind of impervious to that. It all happened so fast and was overwhelming. And then Justin Bolt for going and kind of being my bodyguard, so to speak, my assistant, helped me get in and out of the room and to the venues. But, I mean, to everybody that helped me and those that I don't know, thank you very much from the bottom of my heart. I hope we continue to show the pool isn't TV. That, yes, it's just like life. There's some heads and there's some good people. And we just got to highlight the good. And I think we're doing that. We're trending towards helping young kids get scholarships through pool. We do a lot of fundraisers to help when people are sick or ill. We do a lot of charity work throughout our community. is a totally different view and history of our sport now than even, say, 1980s or 70s was. Pool has become a game that you can feel good about and feel good of being around the people that are there, and the pool halls that people play in are much more user-friendly and more honorable to be in. Parents should feel good about having their kids go and play in controlled leagues there for them and developed by adults that care about them. Robert Randolph, I will come see you. He's a gentleman that owns a rec room. He is here in Colorado. And I've known Robert for many years. He's just an amazing person. And again, like what you're trying to say, Nate, in the past, and I heard it when I was young, playing at 7, 8 years old, we don't want you going down there. They're a bunch of bad people. Well, now you see pool halls as a family-run business. You see people that have restaurants within their pool halls. They try to tailor their leagues and their tournaments so that there's fair play, that it's fun, it's entertaining, and that everybody feels safe. They've worked really hard. Most pool halls work very, very hard to make sure women are safe and feel comfortable and not harassed, and children to be welcome and to behave and some structure in a way that may not. Let's face it, in today's society, there's not a lot of extra money to go spend on stuff. And it's still the cheapest form of entertainment and teaching that you can get a kid. It doesn't cost much to go play pool. You don't have to have a brand new cue. You can get a bar stick, you know, maybe a couple bucks, depending on what part of the country you're in, per game. And you have a lifetime of learning and enjoying and making friends that will be lifelong friends. I have probably around 2,000 people I know through pool over the years. So it's been a joy and a pleasure to be in that community.
Absolutely. So then before we sign off, you did wanted to one kind of general feedback towards some of the stuff that you've been seeing online over the last couple of years. Did you want to address that now?
Yeah, I'd do that. For a lot of people in the Facebook world, and you're going to call me old, and that's good. We got to stop the stupid things, the negative, this is fact, let me throw it out there because I can, and it's Facebook. We have to learn to be tolerant from one another. Yes, it's great to share opinions. Yes, it's great to share information. It's great to have an opinion. But you've got to be careful and choose your words wisely on what you say and how you formulate them. If, in fact, you're trying to give knowledge or give an opinion, then state it as such, not as fact. Too many of us use the format to make ourselves omni-important, and we're not. We're collective. This is a world. You don't know who's listening. You don't know who's going to be affected by your words. So be encouraging. Show love to all the different needs, all different opinions. And if you don't agree, then politely say, hey, I don't understand or I don't agree. This is why. And give a fact and then wait for the answer. Don't immediately, because you don't like somebody's opinion, start blasting them. That's not how people should act, and especially pool players. We've worked so hard to get a better reputation. It's lazy and weak to just throw barbs at each other because you don't like somebody or you don't like their game or their opinion. It's not necessary. We can learn to love each other more and give love to people, even if we don't agree with them.
I could not echo that more. It's crazy the amount of hatred that we have for each other just for smallest differences of whether or not you choose to support somebody or not. It's sad to see the amount of hatred and vitriol that we have in this world right now. But So I think that I echo everything that you said, and I think they're very wise words, and I hope that somebody who listens to this podcast can take something away from that.
I do too, and closing, I want to just state this. I hope the world is listening, particularly guys like Josh Spiller, Shaw, Shane Gamboni, Sky Woodward, Billy Thorpe. You guys are what we need. We need to have somebody think that they're better than somebody else. But don't demeanor each other. Find a way of politely and competitively find a way to prove your point, not humiliate in public. We have enough of that in the world. It's great that we have the Moscone Cup go from the United States to Europe every other year, because we need to learn different cultures. We need to embrace each other in a fun and friendly manner. Yeah, it can be competitive. Yeah, we can get our voices loud, but we don't need to get mad. Just enjoy the camaraderie and friendly barbs. We have enough of that nonsense with politics and war and violence. That we don't need all that in our sports as well.
Very well taken, and I think that's really words to live by. So, Charlie, with that, we can get you out on this, and I thank you for all the work that you've done in the game, from a life of pool, and I hope that I'll be seeing you next year in London for the Moscone Cup again.
I'm going to put that as my long term goal, and if I do, I will be honored to not only see you but all the other people, especially the rowdy British fan.
For sure. All right, Charlie. Thanks again.
Thank you, buddy. Bye-bye.
For the second part of the interview, I am going to be bringing on Rob Randolph. And Rob Randolph is a local pool hall owner in Colorado. So, Rob, welcome to the podcast, first off.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
And why don't we start out with talking about your pool room and what's your goal with the local pool scene in Colorado is?
You know, my goal is quite simple. It's I want to keep pool fun. I want to keep pool available to everyone that's out there. We certainly do some things differently at my pool hall than some other places do. We were one of the first pool halls in the northern area of Colorado to switch over to diamond tables. Since that point in time, literally almost every pool hall in the area has now switched over to diamonds. We are one of the few pool halls that allows minors to come in and play. Contrary to what some people think, it is not illegal. It is only illegal to serve alcohol to minors, not to let them in your establishment. So when a lot of other places are turning them away, we're welcoming them to come in and try to get them interested in the game and try to grow the population out there that plays the game. That's really what our main objective is, you know, get people to play pool and have fun and see what a wonderful sport it is and just how great it is to be part of that community.
Absolutely. You know, if we don't start building the next generation, we're going to have nothing left in a couple of years. So that's pretty admirable work.
It certainly looks like it's headed that way.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's there's bright spots. If you choose to be optimistic, there's things to look forward to. But the next generation is seemingly kind of falling behind on that one. So thanks for the work that you're doing. How many tables do you have in your venue? What do you guys have, like, full food menus? What's actually offered to somebody who wants to come explore your pool hall?
We have 7 diamond tables. We've also got a couple of dartboards that we have in there, which are kind of nice if you're waiting on a table. We do have a full menu. We have a small, kind of limited kitchen, but we do have a full menu that we operate out of there, as well as a vending machine with some snacks and stuff in it. Because of the fact that we do allow minors to come in, we have a huge selection of non-alcoholic drinks and beverages that we offer. And then, of course, you know, we offer the full-service bar as well.
So it sounds like the exact place you want to go, not only to play some pool, but maybe to watch a local sports game.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So anybody that's around the Colorado area, and where's your pool hall actually located?
We're located right off of 92nd and Bryant Street, which is just a couple of blocks east of Federal on 92nd Avenue. up in the Federal Heights area of Colorado. So we tend to get a lot of the players more on the northern side of town.
Okay. So I guess we can jump into the reason I brought you on. We all, at this point, we'll already have the interview with Charlie. So we know kind of how he got there and how it went about happening. You and the other person I'm going to be bringing on are going to be the most influential people that actually went about making it happen. And this, all of basically the donations that happened right after you made a comment on it and a post and kind of called out a bunch of people and like basically said, you know, Charlie's been around the pool scene forever. Let's see what we can do for him. And you tagged about 5 or 6 or 7 people. And then you had said how much you were donating and that you kind of put a challenge out there to some of the people around you to give what they could if they could. So do you want to talk a little bit about maybe why you did that and maybe what Charlie means to not only the pool scene in Colorado, but what other people also mean to it and what you guys try to do for each other over there?
Absolutely. I mean, Charlie, as well as his dad, Max, both, quite frankly, have been a huge part of the pool scene in Colorado for as long as I've played, which I hesitate to admit has been over 30 years now. And, you know, it's kind of interesting in the fact that, you know, Charlie's always been kind of more of a southern player, and I've always been kind of more of a northern player, so we never really crossed paths a lot. But what's really interesting, I think, about that is that when you cross paths with Charlie, you don't forget it. He's just an infectious person when it comes to his personality and his passion for the game, and he's just absolutely a pleasure to be around. And I mean, win or lose, it doesn't matter. You always walk away from spending time with Charlie going, man, that guy's amazing. You know, not to mention the fact that Charlie had been a BCA operator here in town for a while. So he was running some BCA leagues, but no matter what, no matter how busy he was always willing to take some time out and help you. We had, you know, I think one of the things that's most interesting about Charlie, though, that you just can't deny is he just has an absolute passion for pool that's almost unequaled. There's very few people that I can honestly say would come to my mind if you asked me if there's anybody out there that has as much passion as he does. And he's always brought that to the game. And so I just kind of felt like, hey, you know, here's an opportunity to really pay somebody back who's done a lot for us in Colorado over the years.
You then kind of put it a challenge out there for some of the other people that basically followed right along in suit. It definitely seems like he has a pretty decent following as far as the friendships that he's made around the game. Either that or Colorado is just insanely generous as a pool community. Is it a combination of those, or what's the ruling on that?
My answer to that is I think it's going to be a little bit of both. We really do have an amazing community here when it comes to pool players. I can think of a number of times when everybody has come together to help somebody else out, you know, through good times and bad. The community that's out here is a generous community. It's a fun community. We all know each other. It's really funny to me. I think one of the things that's most interesting about this community is there are a lot of players that might not see each other for sometimes years. But all of a sudden, you know, if you go down to the VNEA Nationals or the BCA Nationals down in Vegas, you got Colorado pool players running to each other constantly. And, you know, if you see them talking, you would think they were the best of friends. And the truth of the matter is they probably haven't spoken to each other in 2 or 3 years. But we all know each other. We all are aware of each other. We all know who's out there, even though we might run in, you know, kind of a smaller circle on a day-to-day basis. When it comes time to pull together and do something for the community, there's no place I'd rather be than here in Colorado.
Given the track record of being able to raise basically $1,400 for one of your locals in less than a day, I could see why that's a thing. You definitely seem to be a very gracious pool base of players.
And there's some key people that I put on that list, and I put them on there for a reason. It's because they know other people. It's because they're some of the people that I feel like are our drivers are the ones who are going to go out and get people and say, hey, let's do this. So obviously there's more people that donated than the ones that I called out, but the ones I called out, I certainly called out for a reason.
Yeah, definitely. So that was great to see. So I guess at this point, is there anybody else that you'd like to give a shout out for the help that they did as well?
I would just like to give a shout out to the entire community. I was as amazed as you were that we were able to pull it together as quickly as we were. I knew getting the word out would get something done. I had no idea that it would happen that fast. So it just makes me that much prouder of this community and the people and the players that are in it.
I don't know if I can echo that anymore. It was a pretty sweet thing that you guys were able to pull off for this. So I guess with that, Rob, thank you so much for coming on and joining the podcast and talking about some of the good charity work that we're able to do in the pool community. And hopefully we'll be seeing a little bit more of that from different areas around the country.
Absolutely. And thanks for giving me the opportunity to do it. I really appreciate it. And, you know, hopefully we'll get some new people to come and check out the rec room. We try to do a lot of things up in our area. We've got Johnny Archer coming in on the 27th this month. We got Mike Massey is kind of a regular customer of ours. So if you haven't been there, come and check us out. We'd love to see some new faces.
Absolutely. Definitely support the pool rooms that are doing their part to help grow the game. And with not only your youth movement, but your charitable work, it's definitely want to try to get over there and support that pool hall if you're in the local Denver or even Colorado area.
Yeah, let's get you to town someday.
I might just have to.
Let's do one of these in person.
That would be fun.
All right, man.
All right. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you.
So I was hoping to be able to bring on one additional person to complete this interview. But unfortunately, with the holidays and just his work schedule and my schedule, we just weren't able to link up to be able to complete his part of the interview. So I didn't want to sit on this interview any longer. I figured it's probably time just to release it and get it out there. But I do want to give a big shout out to Manny Burrows as well, because he actually donated the flights for two people, both Charlie and Justin, to be able to get to Las Vegas. And he also was able to comp a room for them for the duration of their stay in Las Vegas with some of the credits that he had had through a different Las Vegas Strip casino that was able to be transferred to the Luxor. So huge shout out goes to Manny Burrows and the great work that he did to help get Charlie out there to be able to experience the Moscone Cup. Lastly, I mean, this audio isn't great. I'm recording it on my microphone for my computer, so it's not the normal quote-unquote professional quality that the podcast normally has. But I figured that this would be a good time to get this podcast out so that I didn't have to wait, you know, another 2 weeks while I was on vacation. So forgive the quality of the microphone. And so with that, I will tune off. And until you hear from me again in a couple weeks. Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you like what you've heard and you listen through iTunes, please subscribe and leave a rating. It helps others find the podcast. As always, thank you to our sponsors, Jacoby Custom Cues, Cody's Q Therapy, Jeff Glaz's CBD for Life Global, the Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame, The Rocks Sports Bar and Grill, the IQ Practice Cue Ball, and the Wisconsin Pool Player Society. If you like what you hear, consider supporting the people who support the podcast. I would also like to take this time to thank Matt Kitzman, Robert Miller, Natasha, Kurt Elliott, Scott Doolian, Corey Smith, William Sutherland, and Mike Teasy for their help to market the podcast to a larger audience. Lastly, I would like to thank my cousin Andrew Mindham for his band Hey Captain Knight's music as segment and filler music to the podcast. If you like what you hear, you can find all of his music at heycaptainknight.bandcamp.com, and Knight is K-N-I-G-H-T.